Saturday morning, and I know where I am. I hope you guys are all comfortable. I usually go into long-winded starts to give enough background and the rest. You've heard a lot of my stuff. I'm always happy to repeat it. But there's so much going on. So, and I was an early reader, read everything I can get my hands on. There's no subject that doesn't interest me or I don't want to know about. So when I was thinking about, especially last weekend, coming into this prior week with D-Day and everything else, I always, because I've always been a person who understood that from the beginning of time, we settled most things with conflict. You know, the old might is right. Whether it was right or wrong, the guy who was left standing was the guy who was generally in charge till the next thug came along and replaced him. The biggest thing in history, forget how long mankind has been around, we've only gotten to a more modern age with communication and travel and the rest of it. So it isn't so much that we can reach out and touch each other, but we have to reach out and live with each other. So all of this made me think of the sacrifices that have been made. Everybody can think about the people who died during conflicts and arrests. I do. I always think that from people dying and difficult incidents, we hopefully learn. Our idea is not to extinguish life on the planet, but to try and promote it, prolong it, and live better. That's what everybody really wants when you meet them and talk to them. So we may not like other people, and we all have different perspectives. There's a famous live and let live. Well, that means it's got to be a two-way street. So what you want to do is convince people that you don't have to kill them. They don't have to kill you. You don't have to bully people either. You just have to know how to keep a good position so we're ahead of it. So thinking about the soldiers' D-Day, one of the most horrific events, but without it, it was the means toward ending the war in the European theater, because Hitler had a lot of developments and the rest of it, including the one thing, no matter how maniacal, you can't just look at the ugliness of the person. You want to study them to understand what you're dealing with. If it wasn't for him overextending himself, he was already developing nuclear weapons. They didn't necessarily call it that, but that's what they were working on. They already developed a jet plane. They already had some models that were flying. Had he been able to keep his manufacturing going and not spread himself too thin on too many fronts, as he was warned and as history would have told him, had he understood it enough. Everybody gets so egomaniacal that they figure they're going to do better than what other people failed at. They should always look at the numbers and understand there are limitations on everything. So fortunately, because of his ego getting the better of him, he no longer could really develop his jet planes and get them in the air. Otherwise, we would have been toast at that point. Same thing with the Japanese, with what they did. They had great plans. They're an ancient civilization, and they had plans that were how to take over the world. They weren't looking at Hitler. They were looking at them dominating the world. So there would have been fights and everything else had that continued. That's not what we need. What we need is how to take care of each other, how to keep away from each other, how to give each other space. Just because I believe everybody has the equality of life doesn't mean I want them to just feel free to piss on the streets, in plain English. We have sanitary laws to help protect us. In fact, changes in sanitation, simple sewage and other things have actually extended life more than most of the medical breakthroughs from what I've been reading over time. And there's nothing wrong with the medical breakthroughs, but it's a combination of things that keep us where we are. We have too much at stake as a species to destroy what we've gotten to. So keep it in mind when we do things. So Today, the title of my show was, to keep it simple, was Remembrance / Rededication Day. R&R isn't always rest and relaxation, even though that's what it used to indicate in the military most of the time. But rest and relaxation is what you make of it. If I know that I can take some time off and I don't have to stand up on my guard post with my gun loaded and cocked and ready to fire, I can rest and I can relax. You always have to be vigilant because there's always some crazy person who didn't get the message and doesn't understand that if they start a war, we all can end up losing. So, in remembrance of all of the people who gave their lives, when I think of Omaha Beach, which they've talked about a lot, where there were 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 waves of people, and I think it was 80% or 90% of the first wave that got shot right on the beach. While the Germans weren't ready for the attack at that point, they'd set up enough in their planning that they had such crossfire on that beach and such fortifications that you had to get over that while you're working on the fortifications, just a few soldiers in their pillboxes on top of the hill could devastate us. It wasn't a tiny beach. It was a wide beach. You were basically in a shooting gallery. I remember when I was a kid, one of the famous poems that was out there was dedicated to what they considered an insane charge. It was called The Charge of the Light Brigade by a famous poet, Alfred Lloyd Tennyson, or Lord Tennyson. I may have his title wrong. And The Charge of the Light Brigade was when the British were fighting the Russians at one point in some area in, let's call it central to Eastern Europe, or another area close to it. The bottom line was, because of miscues and stupid commanders who thought that they were told to go in there and take something, 600-plus British soldiers, horseback. This was in the 1850s. You could always look up The Charge of the Light Brigade, and it's a cool poem about them just following orders and riding right into the middle of this, call it a valley, where they were going to mainly be shot to death almost definitively. But, you know, when I go back and look at the statistics from that, because the internet gives us such wide access to almost every piece of nonsense we want to find, it was no more than 40% of the 600 that either died or became casualties. So as bad as that charge was, which was a death charge, because of some stupidity when you read about it in orders and whether they really had to go in there or not, Omaha Beach, that first wave, 80 or 90% of the guys trying to get out of those boats, those transports that brought them to the beach, got shot. As soon as they opened their front door, a lot of them were shot. You just kept moving to hopefully live. And by the fourth, fifth, sixth wave, the casualties were down enough. They found a way to get out. You can read it. There are a number of things they did because of the barbed wire they had to get past to even get up the cliffs. And then again, remember, we threw the airborne behind the lines. So it was an all-out assault, knowing what we were dealing with. And there's no guarantee of anything when it comes to war. Sometimes little things change it. So that's why I said remembrance and rededication. Do we want to always get to a point where we have to throw ourselves into the jaws of a mixmaster that's going to crunch us up and leave a few left? That's not the way we want to live life. We hopefully have been able to get better. So please, look up The Charge of the Light Brigade. Look up Omaha Beach. And again, the Light Brigades were the Brits fighting the Russians at that particular time. I've got a whole bunch of things that came to mind. That's why I called it what I did. Second thing was, we talk about women's equality, the suffragettes, the voting. There are so many things in history that if we look at it, teach us things. But you know what? When we started to get into war, we knew we needed a whole bunch of bodies. This was still a war where, yes, you weren't going mano a mano, hand to hand, as in the old days, 100, 200 years ago, 300 years ago. But you still needed a lot of forces. You didn't have the super powerful weapons that we have now that just obliterate whole areas. So we were sending millions of people that we were training and sending. And of course, generally, this was all men. There were women in the military, and they did their job in the Air Force, in the Nurses Corps, everything else. But one of the things that they've been honoring over this D-Day week, they were talking about, everybody heard, or if you've heard about World War II, look up Rosie the Riveter. Now, it was a sign. They just said, come on out and help. We need you to work. Well, hell, we took every able-bodied young man, and we were getting them trained to throw them into this battle for the existence on our planet. So guess what? The women who couldn't get jobs in these manufacturing industries were put in there. And they were the ones who were doing the riveting and the building and the cutting and the welding and everything else. You know what? You're not going to sit home and make tea and wait for the guy to come back if there may not be anybody coming back. So Rosie the Riveter is a lesson to all of us. Were it not for the balance of our population, let's call it the other 50%, who have brains and feelings and everything else, just like any guy, I've always honored women. If it wasn't for women, I wouldn't be here. Yes, it takes two to tango to make a baby, but women played unique roles in getting us to where we are, and there should be no reason that a bunch of old men in Congress decide what women need. And on a little aside, I didn't put it on my list. Joe Biden, who I like, I think he's a great guy, and I think he'd make a good president. We've got tons of great candidates out there. We're going to choose. It's going to winnow down. And I hate to say it, almost any one of them are more capable, if not every one of them, more capable than the idiot that we have in office right now. I don't hide my feelings. I've felt this way about this guy since way back. Again, he doesn't apologize for anything, and he keeps running the same thing. He doesn't even progress in his thoughts. When he gets power, he wants to prove that what he said 20 years ago was great. So he goes ahead and does it, even though the world has changed. So, Charge of the Light Brigade, I've talked about. Rosie the Riveter. Pro-choice, pro-life. I believe everybody has their rights. I have said this before, equal rights, everybody being equal. I don't need amendments to make me understand that. All humans have an equal basis in living and breathing and doing what they need to survive. If you think about pro-life, you don't need a movement. If you're pregnant, you want to have a child, it's up to you how hard you have to fight, whether you got people supporting you. So they don't need anybody. We don't automatically abort children. So pro-life doesn't need a movement. Pro-life is what's been happening all throughout history. So yeah, I'm pro-life. I have nothing wrong with humans being born, but I have something wrong with burdening a human on what may have happened and not be wanted. That person may raise a child and hate that child and make it hate life. Without getting into psychology, the Hyde Amendment, I haven't had time to read it yet, but a good friend read it and told me what's in it. Just like I said, nobody's read this opinion of the legal counsel from the Department of Justice about the president can't be indicted. That's just the opinion of one man. It sits there. It's not law. Anyway. And I agree with Nancy Pelosi. I'd rather see this guy in jail. So I think strategically she's saying, let's have our hearings. Let's go on. You want an inquiry? Yeah. But she doesn't want to give him an arguing point. Look, they're coming after me. Because all he does is distract while he puts money in his pocket and doesn't do anything for us. We've proven this many different ways. I'll talk about some of them a little later. So Rosie the Riveter, pro-choice, pro-life. These women put their life on the line. Without them working on building the equipment and the parts and the guns and the tanks and the rest of it, we wouldn't have been able to win the war. So say thank you to every woman you meet, because they equally put their life on the line in the background. A war isn't just won by the soldier on the front lines. If he has no rifle or ammunition or no weapons, he's going to be killed pretty quickly. So Rosie the Riveter, think about it, look back. It deals with all the women filling in the jobs. And when the war was over, they basically gave them a pink slip and said, okay, go home, we don't need you now. Sad in a way, because we got rid of a very functioning part of our economy. Now women have gotten into the economy more. We could talk about how that works, what it means to us. Roles are changing a lot. Then rationing. During the war, everybody in the country was taught women didn't go get nylons anymore if they wanted them because we couldn't afford to use that product that was needed for other wartime efforts. Gasoline was rationed. There were coupons. We all as a country made the effort. If we hadn't all cooperated, we wouldn't have gotten to the victory that we did. It wasn't just the soldiers on the front line. We were a group working for a common cause. If we understand that and get that spirit back in what we do, as I said, I tried to reduce this months ago to this little sign, M-I-H, make it happen. It doesn't mean you go out and you just chop at the tree, it falls over and you're done. There's a process. There are things that need to be done. We have to work with one another. Otherwise, we won't get what we want. So rationing was, again, something that happened during the war. Everybody helped. Apartments were shared in certain cities where they couldn't afford to build new buildings, but they needed people there to man the factories. I want to mention the Geneva Convention again. I've mentioned it once or twice before. While we start to remember, because you know what? Everybody doesn't have to serve in the military to understand what a country we have and how it got here and what it takes to maintain it and keep it going forward. I may not leave my children tons of money or anything else, but I will leave them a country where they can speak their mind, where they can learn what they want, where they can move around and see the beauty of nature and God and whatever you want to call it. That's a blessing. That's the value of that stock, I said, that we all own, this one share of America. So I'll get back to that at the end. So Rosie the Riveter, rationing, Geneva Convention. We decided because of the horrors of war, when you read back about what happened in World War I with the gases they used, it was like we were letting every chemist in any government agency experiment with different things on how to not just kill people, but torture them. Mustard gases. These things didn't necessarily kill you, but man, did they make you want to die when you understand how vile some of these chemical things they used. That's why they were outlawed. The Geneva Convention was something that we fought for and almost every country on the planet signed a long time ago. It basically said, we need humane treatment. How do we put other people on trial as war criminals if we don't act in a civilized way when we capture people? So the Geneva Convention was saying there's certain basic human treatment. Now, I look at that because if that's the basic treatment for a prisoner of war, it should be no less for a prisoner in a jail. It should be no less, pardon me, it should be no less than for some immigrant. And again, this country was built by immigrants, whether they were brought here not of their own free will or they came here for the opportunity to do something new, to build a life for themselves. And we need them because we fought in the last 40, 50 years for what was called zero population growth because we were overpopulating the world. Well, the rest of the world is not stopping. We need enough to sustain the human power that we need in our industries, whether they be manufacturing or on the front line of cutting edge. We need to understand why we built, after World War II, more self-sufficiency. I remember when I was younger, understanding that natural resources are so important so that if you're cut off by your enemies from other things. You've got enough within your border to make, whether it's metals or chemicals or whatever you need to survive. We happen to have a country that's very rich. So does Russia, generally speaking. It's, again, a country that's very rich in oil and gas and minerals and other things. That's why we even set up certain stockpiles of what's called important strategic materials, so we always have them when we need them. So, Geneva Convention is a base standard. It's like saying if somebody's below that poverty line, they're heading toward death. We're not really taking care of them. Geneva Convention, when you take people who you hear and you just stick them under a bridge and put some chicken wire around them, maybe you're not shooting them, but you're not exactly giving them good conditions for breathing and everything else. Bacteria happens. You're going to end up with plagues that could spread into our own country. So, becomes an important baseline. The Geneva Convention says people need air and water and toilets and whatever so that we don't end up with more of a problem. The next thing where we don't understand how a rational approach to life, and we are a big nation with a lot of power and a lot of things. So let's look at nuclear power, which at one point everybody was poo-pooing. It doesn't mess up the atmosphere the way other things do. But I can tell you, because I worked in an industry where we built nuclear power plants, company that far preceded my birth, but grew into this giant that built these plants because they designed the methodology and the rest of it. I started to understand, because I do love science and technology, and I worked with the guys who were in charge of the project, not just multi-degreed engineers, but multi-degreed scientists from all over the world. So that also taught me people are people, no matter where they're from, no matter what they look like. You just have to use them properly and treat them right. So Chernobyl, I used to joke with people that if you're the head of the Soviet Union back then, while they still held the Eastern Bloc of Europe, before they could no longer afford to keep it. It was one of the most poorly managed economy because the head of the Soviet Union didn't understand economics well enough. They have brilliant people in Russia who understand economics, but when the leader is a unitary leader who believes that if he farts, it's a statement that makes sense. So you get a leader, I used to joke, I said all it meant in the Soviet Union with advanced technology was you're shaving in the morning, you're in charge of the country, you're looking in the mirror, you say, hey, I want to build a nuclear plant over there in Chernobyl. And you answer your own image, you say, sure, go ahead, you got my permission. No EPA, no Atomic Energy Commission, no review. They build a plant. Now, they spend the minimum amount they believe they need, so they build the vessel that holds the nuclear reaction. They do not put other buildings around it in case there's a breach and things fall out. If you go back and read about Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania, we not only build the containment vessel and the buildings around it and everything else and in structures that are so redundant because we're dealing with a lot of stuff that we do not want to get out. The whole Jane Fonda with the China syndrome was this stuff is so dangerously hot that forget about it exploding out, it's going to burn its way down to China. As I've explained to people, anybody who knows enough about science, if that plant would start to melt down and go into the ground, it not only wouldn't reach the center of the earth, because before it gets there, it reaches something called the magma. That thing is so much hotter and stronger than a nuclear reaction, it just burns it up like a marshmallow that fell in a fire. So we need more understanding, more explanation for people when we do things. Chernobyl, with no oversight, which is what's important in a rational government, was built with minimal specifications. Their scientists knew better, but the people who ran the country said, we only have so much money, just build it, we want the reactor and get the nuclear thing going. So when it went critical and broke, in effect, it spewed radioactive material, just like any bomb exploding. but it spewed material into the air. Now, if nobody gets the point that we all occupy the same planet, no matter what country we stand in, the winds were blowing basically from the east to the west at the time, the jet streams near it, and blew a lot of this stuff over toward Northern Europe. So a lot of it did infect and bother a lot of livestock and people downstream. Of course, around Chernobyl, it became a death sentence, just like the people in Japan when they were bombed at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The radiation was strong. Chernobyl's radiation was even worse from that operating plant. So needing regulation and oversight is really important. We cannot allow people to just wave their hand and decide, I'm going to do this. They've been taking advantage. That's not the way you do business. If you're a developer, even a successful developer, forget the guy who used bankruptcy to put money in his pocket and spent our money and brags about not paying taxes, as I've said before. How do you go to other countries, to NATO and other people, and say you're not paying your fair share when a man bragged about paying no taxes and still rides on our roads, lands at our airports, is protected by our military? Oh, and by the way, I know lots of people. I'd be called if I was an old lady back in New York. They'd refer to me as a yenta. I listen to a lot of stuff, but I don't repeat it unless I have some knowledge that it's true or has a basis in reality. As a veteran, as I've told you I am, I do go to the VA. Well, we all know from what I've said, and if you've read anything in the paper, that Donald Trump took three members of Mar-a-Lago and made them this shadow board running our Veterans Administration. As I've said, it's a nearly $200 billion a year budget. He has had them change contracts, so people are now beholden to him and maybe contributing more to his funds for, you know, re-election. As I said, they can invite me anytime. My background is finance, accounting, taxes, and economics. I will gladly teach them how to do more in-depth auditing or forensics to see where the offsets are, where they're draining money out the back door as payoffs. It isn't just his new hotel down the block from the White House where people book rooms and put more money in his pocket. So, and he's good at this. His father knew how to use things where we all paid for it and they all benefited from it. So let's keep this in mind when we go forward. So Chernobyl, nuclear, the reason I bring it up is we had, and by now anybody who's following news probably on the lamest channel knows that when it comes to security clearance, Donald has put his daughter and her husband, Jared, not only in the White House, not only paying them because they're technically working, but overrode all the intelligence agencies in granting him and her the top secret clearance. Meaning they could read anything, look at his briefing book that he doesn't bother reading, look at all the technological secrets and things we have access to these things. So, Jared kept making all these trips to the Middle East. His part of his portfolio was handling peace between the Israelis and the other countries, especially the Palestinians. Noble venture. But he was making no progress, really. And yet, he made all these trips to the Middle East. Check where he stayed, check where he stopped when he was there. It wasn't just in Israel. Saudi Arabia and a lot of the other countries. So now, what do we find out in the last few weeks? And it's been happening longer than that. We have just agreed, because we're going to get these billions of dollars. Trump feels that if he tells us, we've made a sale. We're getting billions of dollars coming into our treasury. We'll talk about that in a minute. The reason he does that, it's again a distraction, but it's an ugly price that we can pay. He is transferring advanced technology and nuclear technology to the Saudis and a few others, but mainly the Saudis. So they get all this money out of over years selling us oil, and there's no other place they could spend it, but they want to be a power to be reckoned with. Why would you want to when we've tried to stop nuclear power from proliferating on a planet? Why would you want to put it in the hands of a man who openly kills and dismembers a journalist in their embassy? That's kind of brutal. I'm not too worried about what people say, and they're trying to smooth it over, because in the meantime, he made a deal with them where they're going to get this technology. It normally would go through Congress as an equal branch to approve that they should have it. It's not happening. This unitary leader, because that's what he's acting like, needs to be put in place. Every Republican in the Senate who is not bringing things to the floor, who is not willing to exercise oversight on all of these occurrences, they're complicit with him. The only thing we can do, Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever you are, is to get up off your ass in the next election and don't wait for the election. As I said, because of the system as it's been set up, you have to go to primaries. You have to go to caucuses. You have to go to whatever your state is handling so you can choose someone who's not in that group that we've already had misusing our government and just doing whatever they want. If they get the right judges, they'll let them do anything. We have to live with the consequences. And there are many. It isn't that I don't like conservative justices. That's not the point. Justices are there to apply the law. Hopefully, whoever they are will apply it properly. However, when you just don't do your job, it's dereliction of duty. I knew when I was in the military, and it made sense to me, that if I drop my defenses, I'm causing everybody else to be in danger. I deserve to be court-martialed. I deserve to be executed, depending on the circumstances. These people are derelict in their duties. Whatever they think they're getting from it, we have to live with the consequences. So these agreements to sell all this stuff to a country that's run by a man who's is, call it, as richly insane as Donald Trump, where nobody tells him what to do because he's a younger member of this royal family with tremendous wealth. We have to understand that we have to go to our congresspeople, no matter who they are, your representatives, and say, we want this stopped. Because I can tell you that I have seen in my lifetime when other countries get technology, even good countries that we're friendly with and we're careful what we give them, they then start to build their own nuclear industry and become a competitor of ours. And they're selling it to countries that we may not agree should have that technology. So when the Saudis end up with this technology, and we've got to have, they're going to be doing, part of the deal is they're going to be making components for smart bombs. So I guess if we're in the middle of a battle, we have to wait to call Saudi Arabia to ship us over parts because we can't do that advanced manufacturing, which we're good at. Read this stuff. Understand what's going on. We're selling our soul for no good reason. So the money that's coming in the Treasury, Donald, he's just big on pluses and minuses. So he knows the only thing that happened with a full Republican Congress before the 2018 election was they passed a tax cut, which people like to pass. They think they're doing you a favor. Remember, almost 90% of the tax cut went to the less than 1% of people. That means that there are a lot of millionaires who got a benefit, but they're not the biggest beneficiaries. We are the guys who pay the price, because when that money is not in the Treasury, and that's money that we put in the hands of these businesses or these people through their ownership, that they no longer have to send to the Treasury because that money came from the sale of their goods and services to us. Okay? Got to remember, they don't exist if we don't buy their products. So he allows them to take more of the money, make themselves richer, while we wonder how we're going to make our next payment and put our kids through school. You know where his loyalties are. It's real simple to see if you really think about it. Anyway, I would put a first grade school teacher in place of him, even if she isn't finished with a degree. She wouldn't be as jaded and have this thing. If you look how he operates, and I've dealt with almost every industry imaginable, and I grew up in a construction, working class family construction. My father was a bricklayer. My friend's fathers were electricians, plumbers, whatever. And I'd been to building sites, and I saw people who owned the companies and built buildings and how they did it. When you understand what goes on, you want to be sure that we do things right and we do things that benefit us, because ultimately we, the people, pay for it through the taxes, through our purchases, through everything else. We are the market that keeps these companies going more than any other country on the planet. So when you look at taxes and where they come from and who's giving them away, so he gave away these things where he was going to cure the deficit probably in the first year he was in office. Well, it's growing exponentially. He's adding almost $1 trillion a year to it because of what he gave away. And not to the benefit of all of us, and forget trickle down, it doesn't work, and you don't see us being given bonuses by all these companies to tell us, yeah, we're happy, we got all this money from your pocket, and we get to keep it. So now, when we go forward, he knows the Treasury is depleted of funds. So how does he make it look better? So he starts bigger distractions with tariffs. Tariffs equal taxes. And the tariffs he's putting on China are goods and services that we need that we no longer do here. So we can't just say we're not going to do it, which would be another way of doing it. Let's restart those industries. Let's make it here. He wants America first. Well, let's stop buying the stuff from China. That'll hurt them. But no, he puts tariffs on that we, the American public, have to pay for getting the things that we've shifted to their economy. So the growth of China, the growth of their military, the growth of their taking over countries and loaning money and building things like the next part of the Panama Canal that they built, they push us out of the picture with our money because of the greedy people who took this stuff over there to have more of a profit in their pocket. So you want to be nationalistic? You don't fight it by putting tariffs that the American public is paying as an additional tax. So again, Donald Trump has raised taxes by himself, because this didn't go through the Congress, by himself on all of us with everything we're buying. He's teaching them a lesson? No. Listen carefully, folks. He's hoping we don't get the point that he's picking our pocket to say he's teaching them a lesson. We're the ones who are suffering from it. It isn't hurting them. We're not offsetting their growth. There are so many other ways of doing it. Now, with Mexico, he threatens the same thing, except that all the industries that were local, the Congress finally found their cojones, and found out that they should do something. So he's kind of backed off. But he sits there with, when he gets a rumble in his stomach, he may say, well, I'm going to do it again. So let me explain a little of that. All the tariffs that he's charging that we're paying go into the Treasury. So the Treasury doesn't look as empty for all the money he gave out. He sells our technology that he shouldn't be selling on his own whim without going through Congress, without going through military analysis, to people who will then have it and could resell it to other people and easily make back the money they paid us for it. Once you sell somebody something, unless you made them sign an agreement and you know you could lock them up, they can go out and sell it to someone else. What are you going to do? Say, hey, you shouldn't have done that? So you're giving away all your secrets that could be sold to anybody who wants to put up the dollars to pay the Saudis or whoever else has it in their hands. This should not be decided by one man. That's not how we've run our country. That's not how we've protected ourselves. He will even find out that, just like Gorbachev, who was really the guy who opened up the Soviet Union. I have a lot of respect for the man, what he did to try and open his country up. But you know what? Putin's got him sitting at a little farmhouse wherever, not killing him, not making a martyr out of him, but not letting him keep his country free. Putin's the one who's mining his country for all the money he puts in his pocket. As I've said on one of my shows, I would guarantee if you look at all the interest that Putin holds in all parts of Russian activity, he may be the richest man on the planet right now. I wouldn't be shocked to find out he's worth a few $100 billion. So the man is stepping into people so he can maybe get his deal when he's out of the office and build his tower. He takes his family to the commemoration for D-Day when he goes to London to talk to Theresa May, people he insults who are our allies for years that we could count on. He goes over there and he spews all of his nonsense. I was happy that he controlled himself at the ceremony next to the Queen and then when he was at certain other ceremonies. But then what does he do as a veteran? He's sitting there with someone from, I believe it was Fox News, and he had this interview he gave where in the background you could see all the gravestones, the crosses and the Stars of David that are on all those people from the Normandy invasion. They're in the background. Now, this is a man who's a marketing genius. He's not worried about the background at this point. And he's starting to spew his invectives about Nancy Pelosi and other people. The man doesn't care where he is and who he talks. He just wants to keep distracting. He's an embarrassment to us for ever letting him become president and for us not taking whatever action we need to take. And as I said, Nancy's right. Let's have all the hearings. Let's get more of it out. Let's let everybody understand all the nastiness that he tries burying so that when it comes time for the election, his own family shouldn't be voting for him. And then when he's out of office, because impeachment takes a lot of work, the Republicans in the Senate so far don't want to vote for it. I guess no matter how you embarrass them, they've sold their soul at this point. We'll see. But if you put enough out there, everybody will know enough to be careful when they go vote. Make sure they get a ballot copy of what they did vote for when it's recorded so that there is no playing with the election. And then when he's out by 2020, they can just indict him and throw him for what he is, a criminal, into whatever jail they want. They could put him in a nice jail, an ugly, I don't care. He needs to be off the streets. He needs to be taught that no one is above the law. And when it comes out, the things he's done, and when you understand how he's selling off parts of our government and our security to countries that really don't owe him or us allegiance when it comes down to it. That's what we all have to keep in mind. So, the Fed rates. Now, this man took over an economy. It's sad. We'd had a series of presidents where certain presidents came in and messed up the country, and then other presidents came in and had to spend their 4 to 8 years fixing the mess the other guy left. Hey, hello to the Facebook watch party. And in case I didn't say it last week because it was the day before, two of my favorite ladies on the planet had a birthday last Sunday. They know who they are. And congrats. I look forward to them being around for many years. Vicky, the only thing I will ever speak is the truth. If you catch me saying anything else that I misspeak, as I've said before, you can get to me on Instagram at AE, the word equals, and then MC squared. Facebook, AE equals MC squared. You can email me at AE, the word equals, then the letters MCSQ at gmail.com. Or throw up a flare. If I see it, I'll answer it. But I make sure that no matter what I know, I verify. And I make sure I verify it from reliable sources. When it comes to being a veteran and what's going on, not only did these people behind the scenes, as I started talking about, are running our $200 billion budget and changing the contracts to different people that in the back door may be paying them funds that they get. So Trump wants to cut the budget of the VA because it's one of the major portions of our federal budget. And I know he's been looking at it. I know he's changed it. I've seen when I go there every few weeks because I get a shot every couple of weeks that I need to keep alive. Nothing tragic, but there are a lot of chemicals in our body that we need to keep us alive. And I was happy to find out when I had something happening that it's treatable. Nothing serious, not contagious, but it's treatable. So I go there and I observe. I've always done it since I was a kid. What's going on? What's changing? Whatever. Well, I've noticed how parts of VA are hollowing out. How the change in the parking lot, the change in the building, the change in the number of people around. Again, not by rumor, but by things that I know are going on right now. Trump is looking to not only just shut down the VA and make it smaller, because that would mean when he runs, he'll say, look how much I cut the budget. So all of you veterans, we're getting our treatment there, and it's one of the best medical treatments you can get in a lot of ways. Yes, it's busy. So he started outsourcing it, which is another way for him to get funds for running that organization in the background that outsources it and gets fees from our government out of that budget. He's trying to outsource more, but he's trying to limit what we can do. So now we've got a president who was a draft dodger who thought getting a sexually transmitted disease was equivalent to serving in Vietnam. This man is now in the background deciding that when we visit the VA, as we've done throughout decades, he's going to start limiting how many times we could visit. I've got this. I've heard rumors about it from many different avenues, many different friends, many different people. When there's enough, speaking enough of the pieces that aren't on the same parts of the planet talking to each other, there's something going on. He's going to cut down that whether we go outside as he's trying to do or inside as we do, he wants to charge us more for what we've been getting as a follow-up for our service. Keep watch. Understand, veteran, you're voting for a man who doesn't give a shit what happens to you when it comes down to it. And I'm sorry to put it in street language. I can get uglier than that. I grew up in Brooklyn. I do have the best words in my mind, and I can use them better than he can. And I'm a couple of years older, and I've watched this man play with people. So, be careful. Veterans pay a lot of attention. Ask your VA people what's going on in those hospitals and facilities that you visit. Because you know what? A lot of them are located in beautiful places. I'm sure he'd love to get us out of it and say, hey, we don't need that facility. Close it down and convert it into a hotel or something. You know, I hate to tell you, I've seen buildings repurposed in my life. I understand how you could take a shell, cut it open, and make it into a condominium because it's well located. Anyway, Jerry, welcome. You're on Facebook as usual. 3 Mile Island was also a disaster. Yes, it was. But the difference that I'm trying to explain, Jerry, was the way we build a plant. And again, I grew up with technical education in a specialty school in New York City, part of the public system, but competitive to get into. And I've dealt with scientists and engineers who design these places. It's like saying, our nuclear plants, before they ever get started, are built like a Sherman tank on steroids. And Chernobyl was built like a scooter with no tires. So when a plant goes bad, there's no redundancy to stop it. There's no containment buildings to keep the gases that escape from it. 3 Mile Island was a puff. I wish it never happened. But because of the design, it was contained within it and a little bit got into the air. Check what's happened from Chernobyl. Big difference. We don't want that type of crap happening on the rest of the planet, because if people sell plans and they build plants the way the Russians did in Chernobyl, when that radioactivity escapes into the air from those countries, it doesn't just sit in those countries. It's like a bird. It flies where it wants to, except the jet streams take it around the world. And that's what will harm us all when we do not contain technology that we give to other people because they've paid us a lot of money into our treasury. That's not a reason for giving out nuclear technology, especially not advanced weapons technology. So, yes, we've had, and I've known about these things. I worked in the industry. That's like saying I cut my finger while I was working. If I don't take care of it and treat it, I could get an infection. I could die. But less likely than I cut my head off. Big difference, Jerry. So I'm not belittling Three Mile Island or any place else. But the redundancy we build into our nuclear plants or the ones we design are different than other people. So, let me also say, while Trump distracts us and the rest of it, Jared Kushner, besides whatever else he's doing in the background, from what I know of him, he's a more modern person who's into investments in the markets, and he had the funds to invest in the rest. When you have a lot of money, and I've dealt with people who've set up funds in the old days and started what they called hedge funds and other things, when you've got tons of money, you have to invest differently. And you don't want everybody following you because they could mess up your game. But they may invest in treasuries, the switch. To them, a quarter or a half a point change in a treasury bond because they've invested millions or billions, depending what they're running, they can make a hell of a lot of money on a swing. So Jared was schooled and trained in it. He learned how to do it. And he's got enough money and friends to go with him on some of these things. So imagine when you have all these wonderful clearances and you understand how to do this, there are people who react to the markets or make a gamble on what they think is going to happen. But what if you're sleeping in Washington, D.C., and your father-in-law is the president, and you know because you've convinced him, because Trump's all about money in his pocket. You've said, hey, I've told you that we can make a few hundred million dollars if you wake up the next morning, you go out and say, these people have been ripping us off. I'm going to stick a tariff on them. And you see the market go up and down because it's an emotional roller coaster of sorts. Before that announcement that morning, if you knew your father-in-law was going to say that, you go out and you take an option position on different markets or commodities or something else. There are many strategic ways of playing these games when you've been trained in it and understand it. And when you're on the inside, that amounts to what we'd call insider trading. I would love to see, not that they don't have enough to do right now, I would love to see, so people would get a better understanding of this, a financial oversight committee looking into everything Trump's done. I've talked to you before a couple of weeks ago about in the first 2 years, he spent more than 220 days at his resorts where we've paid millions of dollars for him being there and everybody else we had to bring there. I told you it was minimally coming out of our treasury. Man who pays no taxes, proud of it, talks about other people paying their fair share, that we've put anywhere between $70 million and $220 million in those first 2 years just into the resorts that he owns that he's stayed at. So when he gives you $400,000 back that he doesn't need, of course he doesn't need it. He's ripping off our money that we need for other things. Market swings, theft from the treasury, which is what he's doing in effect, by trying to get projects that are under him that he controls. Because normally it's controlled through the House, through certain cabinets, under certain parts of the government. So when he makes this whole thing about the southern border, if he can get those funds reallocated and he puts somebody in charge of building that wall, as I've said before, that contract is going to get him some money through the back door from the person who gets that contract. Those tents that he's building to house these people, no matter what kind of poor job they're doing, those people kick back some money through either contributions to his campaign or something else. People, it's not that hard to find out. And as I said, I volunteered. If they'd let me go over the government books, I'll find them and show it to you. I've dealt with a lot of interesting, bright criminals in my life that I've run into in many different governments, including rogue governments, because of my company is doing international business. And I've told them, do or don't do business with them, and the reasons are protected us from them when needed. I'm now trying to explain to the public, tell your friends, have them listen to the podcast, whatever. Send me things. I will gladly speak at anybody's meeting if you want to get together. So, I missed a letter. I make notes to myself when I have that many things to speak about, and I see I missed a letter in the alphabet. Stock swings, treasury swings, market swings, they're all things that in this day and age you can bet on. And if you have advanced knowledge, and you've seen sometimes where the market day after day, depending on what the our brilliant, brilliant president says, it affects the market and it affects how things go. Putting all this money in the treasury so it doesn't look like the treasury is empty because of us having to pay the tariffs to build up money in the treasury for him to play with. People, don't wait for him to correct what he's done wrong. Because at the same time that we're not selling soybeans and pork to China, as I've explained before, Brazil, as one country I can easily point to, has the ability to grow more soybeans, okay, or other products to sell to China. China would be happy to have a relationship with that bigger country as a consumer to replace us when we're no longer able to do things because we've given away all our power. Strategically, when he got rid of the TPP, that was a strategy, as I've explained before, to combine with all the other Pacific Asian area countries other than China who would work with us in that trade group to contain China more than now. With TPP gone, China is going into more and more countries. And the growth of China from when they opened up has all been on our backs because of companies that went there to sell us goods at a cheaper cost, but sell it to us at the same price, make a bigger profit. But in the meantime, they put money in the hands of China, who've built up their military, taking over islands in the Pacific between the Philippines and China. I mean, there's so many pieces to discuss, but they are actively investing the money they took from us. Lastly, as I say remembrance, I want to remember because I want you people to be aware that the country we have, the last thing I had on my list was called the changing of the guard. It's a ceremony if you go to Buckingham Palace or other countries and you see these fancy guards get up, take their guns, walk away, another one come back. Since the beginning of time, once we stopped killing each other on this planet, once we got to a country that was more stable and we don't think about it, and we just go to our job, get in our car, go barbecue, go to an event, the bottom line is that we are being passed on, given this country, for us to maintain. I, when I lived in New Jersey, dealt with Habitat for Humanity. I'm almost out of time, and I helped them. Because when they did houses for people, the people weren't used to being in the houses. They needed information on different things, of taking care of the house, finance, whatever it was. I helped them. I didn't want to see them fail. We all put an effort into it. They were good people. We are given this country. We are given the freedoms that we take for granted. We are the God that takes it over and have a responsibility for keeping it that way. If nothing else, if we all get out and vote in 2020, even the core that loves Donald for whatever stupid reason cannot.